Hi, this is Dave Brock, Partners in Excellence. I'd like to welcome you to a really exciting conversation on sales operations. I think most of us may think of sales operations as kind of backroom people that do mysterious things that, you know, either prevent us from selling or hopefully help us from selling. And I'd like to introduce a guy that really helps salespeople be much more effective and much more impactful. It's Tony Walker. He's runs sales operations for Enterasys. Tony, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, David. It's great to be here, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity to talk to you about some of the things we're doing here at Enterasys and my thoughts on some of the overall aspects of sales operations.
Great, great. Before we jump into it, because I know, I mean, we have a lot to talk about, maybe if you could just give us a little bit about yourself, your background, and your role at Enterasys.
Yep, so I'm the Vice President of Sales Operations at Enterasys. I've been here for 10 years, actually, in April this year. I joined them looking after the European side of sales operations, and I've slowly moved my way through to take over the worldwide aspect in 2008. Prior to that, I've got a little bit of time at 3Com and a few other US companies as well. But I'm based in the UK, but working a lot of my time in Salem, New Hampshire, which is our head office.
Great, great. Well, thanks for that introduction. And now we'll just jump right into it. For some time, I've felt that kind of the sales operations side of organization of sales organizations have been kind of underappreciated and underexploited. And I think, you know, part of it is I look at, you know, as you kind of look at where everything in the sales organization kind of comes together. It kind of organizationally, it comes together up at the top sales executive. But if you look at, you know, who really has a pulse of what's going on and what's happening across the organization, you know, and those kinds of things, it really kind of sits somewhere in the sales operations functions. As I look at kind of, you know, line sales managers, they're focused on their teams and just managing the business on a day-to-day basis. And even as you kind of roll it up to a VP level or regional level or whatever, we tend to be focused more on day-to-day quota driven kinds of activities and not kind of really reflecting on what's happening overall in the sales organization, what's happening with how we interface with the other parts of our organization that we depend on, and what are we doing to drive performance. And I've had the premise that the people that have visibility to that are the sales operations folks. And I'm not sure that they necessarily have the voice they should have, or the kind of sometimes even the seat at the table with the top sales executives to have the strategic influence that I think they could and should have.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely a fair summary, because there's two sides to the way I see the sales operations function working. There's one side which is a service to the sales organization. So the way I describe it is we oil the wheels of the sales organization. So
right.
We make sure that they can go ahead and focus on selling, and we can make sure all the background stuff is all working, the systems are right, the tools are right, the processes are right, the comp plan's right. You know, we make sure all that stuff is there and they can just get full speed up on selling, which is what they're paid to do. And then the second side of it is the strategic side, which is, as you say, the seat at the table to be the representation of the sales function within the executive team and making sure that the connections are there, that supply chain, engineering, product management, finance are all hooked into what's happening in sales and vice versa. So I think it is that very much sitting in the middle ground, figuring out, trying to what's going on across the whole organization and being the interface across the two elements.
Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, that's kind of exactly what we've seen is you kind of provide all this kind of infrastructure that the salespeople, whether it's tools, programs, processes, even in some organizations? Is sales enablement part of your organization as well? Or
it's not. No, we have a separate function for that, although we're very, very interlinked across them, and there's a lot of connections across the two functions that we have.
Yeah, so there's some of the, like, the maybe the tools and content and some of the training and things like that, but all that's really kind of tied together, and kind of what I look at is kind of the global kind of sales operations kind of thing. So,
Yeah, I think our sales enablement is very much a lot of the content and the tool side of it is within this kind of sales enablement function for us.
Okay, and you're just kind of the, you know, removing all the barriers to the sales team really being able to execute on the strategies and the programs.
Absolutely, yeah. It is exactly what you say. It's the programs, it's the process, it's the tools. It's taking off some of the administration burden from them and making the processes easy so they can have more selling time. And also, one of the big things certainly within Enterasys is forecasting. Sales guys love to sell, hate to forecast. So we spend a lot of our time interpreting what's happening into a forecast for the executive team generally, but also specifically into supply chain to make sure we've got the right kit at the right time, which again, we want to make that as seamless as possible so the sales guys do their normal job, and part of that normal job helps us to drive the forecast. So they don't have to think about it as a separate item, they can just do it as part of their job again, which for us links very much into the CRM system.
Okay, so, and just to kind of understand kind of sales operations within Enterasys, so you do you provide kind of all the numbers and the analysis, so you finally with the top sales executive lock in with the forecast, lock in with the performance numbers and those kinds of things?
Yes, that's exactly it, yeah. So a lot of the analysis and the metrics come out of me and my group. The forecast process, we are very much the owners of the process, so that involves me centrally, but also the regional teams working hand in hand with the regional sales teams to come up with the forecast at their level that we then consolidate centrally for the global forecast. So very much the forecast process is under my team and me, and then a lot of the metrics and analysis, and then certainly working with the CEO, for me personally, a lot of my time is sat with him going through, this quarter, next quarter, the rest of the year, where do we think we are, how does it align, how do we compare to last quarter, how do we compare to last year? So a lot of those kind of metrics are coming out of me and my group.
Okay, so it really is kind of overall, it's the big picture in terms of performance analytics, performance metrics, and kind of understanding what's happening and what we need to do about it more at kind of a global level.
Absolutely, and this is the kind of two sides of it. The one side is that global view, which I very much work on, but then my actual team of managers and analysts are in the nitty gritty, out in the regions, in the field, working with the sales managers individually. So it's kind of both sides of it.
Yeah, and that's kind of that dual role that you talked about earlier, of kind of both the tactical role of being out helping the salespeople, making sure all the internal roadblocks and all the things are removed so that they can maximize their effectiveness. So you have people working out in the regions with the regional vice presidents and
Exactly. Yeah. Basically, we have four geographies. Each of a geo sales lead, and I have an equivalent geo sales operations manager who is basically the right hand man kind of thing of the sales manager. In terms of supporting them, certainly when I used to look after Europe prior to taking the worldwide role, and the geo president of Europe, the way he always described it was that he was out in the field doing the selling job and managing the sales team. The sales operations manager was looking after the farm back at home kind of thing. So we were in the office making sure things were working whilst he was out meeting customers, partners, and end users and stuff. So that was the way he described it, and I think that's a very good summary of it. It's just making sure everything's working out in the regions as well.
Super. Let me ask you, and this may be from kind of your view of looking at Enterasys, or your view of just even more generically looking at the profession of selling across all kind of B2B type organizations. What do you see as the top issues impacting sales performance and maximizing the performance of the organization these days?
So this was a great question. This really got me thinking. When I saw this last night, I thought, that's a great question. And the first one jumped out to mind really easily. So it's getting the sales compensation plan right. That's the first thing you have to get spot on from my perspective, because I think if you get your sales comp plan right, you are then driving the sales team to do the right thing. You know, everyone talks about sales guys being coin operated, which is a little bit rude to a sales guy, but it's the sales comp plan is the message that the company is giving to the salesman to say, this is what we'd like you to do.
Exactly.
It's very important to make sure that's tied to exactly what the company goals are, and you know, you've really thought it through, because again, a good sales guy will read his comp plan, understand exactly what we expect him to do, and then he will go and drive against that. So if you've got that slightly out of kilter with what you actually want, you've got a huge problem. So you've really got to get the comp plan right. So I think that's definitely number one, is get the comp plan spot on. Second thing for me is making the sales process easy. I think sales guys generally will take the path of least resistance. So you've got to make sure the path of least resistance is the one that drives to the right aim. So if you make it easy for them to manage a deal, to do a quote, to place an order, to work with supply chain, to work with the CRM, they're going to follow that easy path. So you've got to make sure that your sales process is easy from an internal perspective, as well as making it externally a very easy process. But I think from a sales guy perspective and a sales organization, make your internal process easy. And the third thing, I think, is to make sure that your sales organization is really aligned with the company goals, and that your individual guys on the street understand what the company goal is. Make sure they understand the sales strategy. Are they correctly aligned? Do they get the whole culture? Do they understand, like Enterasys particularly, when we talk about being a social business and collaboration, are they bought into that? Are they collaborating with the other sales teams, with other functions of the organization? Are they aligned with the goals? You know, if we've come up with a really good way to position the company and position our products, has that message got out to the whole organization? Do they all understand it? So it's really, again, making sure they understand what the company's trying to achieve, and that will then help them to focus themselves a little bit where they need to be. I think for Enterasys, you know, we live by the phrase, there's nothing more important than our customer. So
right.
We want every single person to understand that. We want the sales guy, we want the guy in finance, the guy in supply chain, the lady who answers the phone. We want everyone to think about that and everyone to understand exactly what that means. So from the sales perspective, we want them to understand that our priority is the customer, but that doesn't mean the customer is always right. It
right.
means that the customer is always has to be served correctly, but doesn't mean they're always right. And so you get some sales guys who interpret there's nothing more important than our customer as the customer's always right, which is not quite what it actually means. So it's really getting them aligned with that goal and understanding the culture that we're all getting behind to make sure they all stay on the same page and they're with us.
Mm-hmm. And how do you do that? What's the process that you go through to really get everybody aligned and to embed into them kind of the culture, the value system, but also embed, you know, there's that tough-mindedness that salespeople have to have around that, you know, the customer isn't always right.
Yeah.
But
so I think the key thing for us is communication and collaboration. And I know Valor talks a lot about collaboration. When you read his blog and hear his interviews, collaboration is one of the key things. And it's making sure that everyone knows they can pick up the phone and talk to the different functions. Internally, we use Chatter, which is one of the Salesforce.com
right.
tools. That's a very important communication tool for us. You know, we use it, I guess you would say like Twitter or Facebook, but we use it internally. We communicate a lot through there. Our CEO communicates through there. We update a lot of the numbers on there. So again, it gets everyone kind of engaged with what's happening with the company. And then our culture, it's very, very important for Enterasys is to drive the right culture. And we put a lot of effort and a lot of time into making sure new starters, when they're on boarded, they understand the culture. They know what they're getting into. We make sure that there's, you know, even things like there's boards around the offices with the culture card on that describe what
right.
the culture means to people. So we're very much about communicating the culture, collaborating across the different teams, and it's really getting everyone to understand how that all fits together and what it actually means. So we're very much a kind of open company. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's no problem if an individual sales guy wants to pick up the phone and call the CEO. He'll take
right.
the call. And have a reasonable conversation. So we like to pride ourselves on being a very open company. You can talk to anyone. We're, you know, because we're not a huge company, we are able to have those connections right through from individual people right up to the executives and across the different geographies and regions.
Right, right. What kind of metrics do you put in place to kind of reinforce and assure that those things are happening?
Oh, that's a good one, actually. Goodness me, we don't specifically have metrics around ensuring people are working together and the kind of culture side of it. I'm just trying to think if there will be any
But
the metrics we use for that specifically.
how do you kind of get your finger on the pulse of that?
I think, again, it's very much through the management team. It's really, ensuring that the management team from not just the sales management, but also the other functions are very closely connected into the regions. And so, we all have a pretty good feel for what's happening in all the different countries. So it's just really kind of being out there and being with the teams and understanding what's happening and talking to them. So there's not really specific metrics we're looking at. It's just being out there and understanding that the culture is being applied and people understand it and people are living and breathing by it. I think it's more around a soft feel for it rather than anything solid.
No, and I really get that. I mean, there's this kind of qualitative thing that you get that when things are going right. And then you
And I
also
think it's
start
perhaps
seeing,
easier to know when things are going wrong.
well, that I was about to say, all of a sudden you
Isn't
start
it?
seeing disagreements and conflicts, and those become kind of the early warning signs that something's off kilter here, and we really need to look, both at the specific issue, but what's underlying it, and what's
Yeah, and I think that's it. I think the good thing is when that kind of arises, because we are so kind of vocal about the culture and we're very open about what it means, it's very easy to go to someone and say, hey, that what's just happened there, that doesn't really fit into where we are as a company. That doesn't fit in with the culture. How can we bring it back on board? So it's quite good for us to deal with those because we have such a an open culture in terms of it's very visible. So it's very easy to make sure people are still aligned with that.
So you're being more attentive to kind of the outliers and the problems than you are to I don't know whether I'm saying using the right word, but the compliance and those kinds of things.
Yeah, because I think you get to a point whereby when things are working, you kind of have to watch them, but you don't have to be all over them. When things aren't working, that's where you put more attention in the short term. So I think you get that with the whole behavior of the organization as well.
And I imagine too, a lot of that you solve too by your whole recruiting and onboarding process.
Absolutely, yeah. We have a new hire training for every employee in the company. So when someone starts, they spend a week at our head office in Salem, and they will be almost, I'd hate to say they've been indoctrinated with the culture, but certainly they get full exposure to who we are and what we're all about. They'll meet the whole bunch of the executive team, and really, that's the time to get the new starters to understand exactly where we are. But also, I think ahead of that time, we look for a particular sort of person at Entemesis. We look for a particular sort of sales guy. We have a view of what kind of people fit into the organization and will work well and will prosper for them and for us. So we already have that as part of the kind of process. And then once people are on board, we then get them involved in the culture right from the start by doing new hire training. So even if someone joins in Germany, they will go to Salem, New Hampshire for a week of new hire training. It doesn't really matter which part of the organization they join, they go into the head office and get that full experience.
Super. Let me go back to the second element that you talked about to make the sales process easy, and part of what you said was, get the salespeople to see how the sales process really benefits them in terms of, closing more business more profitably in shorter sales cycles and those kinds of things. What are some of the kinds of things that you do from a sales operations point of view, one, to really design and develop, sales processes that are based off your best experience, and two, to roll that out and get people to own this and say, this helps me be a better salesperson.
So I think the key there has been our implementation of Salesforce.com, which we've had for must be 2005, 2006 when we started using it, and we've developed it over the years, and that's now absolutely key and central to the sales process. That is our, from a metrics perspective, that's our system of record. We have our financial systems, of course, but from a sales organization, that's what we're looking at. That's where we see our opportunities, that's where we see our accounts, that's where we see our leads. We've also built into there our quoting process, so that's embedded within Salesforce.com. So we want our sales guys to just automatically use Salesforce.com as their as their tool. What we don't want is for them to have the little black book with all their notes in and their deal notes scribbled down. We don't want that.
So they live their lives in Salesforce, and from a management point of view, it's not real if it isn't in Salesforce.
That's exactly the phrase. If it's not in Salesforce, it doesn't exist. Right. That's exactly the phrase we use. And that goes to appointments, to information on the account, specific opportunities, pipeline into the future, then also the service side of it. There's a whole back-end service piece all around Salesforce as well in terms of customer quality and that kind of thing. That all fits onto Salesforce. But from a sales guy perspective, we want them to live and breathe on Salesforce, update everything. The request we make of them is that Salesforce represents the best of your knowledge at that time. So at any given time, we as the management team can go in Salesforce, pull a report, and we expect that represents all the information a sales guy has at that moment in time. Mm-hmm. But then we have to make sure that it's easy to use, it's not cumbersome, it all fits together nicely, there's no duplication of effort, because that's where, you know, if we have, for example, a separate quoting system, we would then be duplicating the effort that the sales guy has to do. So over the years, we've made it much more streamlined, so they can do something once in one place, and that feeds everywhere else, which again makes it easier for them to be able to quote through the system.
Yeah, that's such a killer with so many people, is that if you have to keep re-entering stuff, or you have, you know, different pieces of information in different places, you just can't drive any integrity in the process.
Absolutely. You know, we used to have, way back when, we used to have Salesforce.com as our CRM when we first started as an opportunity management system. We had a separate quoting system, completely detached, and we had a separate process for forecasting our kind of product requirements. Now, it's all in one place. So the individual AE will create a quote for an opportunity that feeds the quoting system if he's generating an outside quote. It feeds the opportunity data in Salesforce, and then it also feeds into our forecasting process from a product-specific forecast. So it's enter it once, and it's visible to everybody, which, again, a big help for them. Then on the back end, the quoting process can generate the quotes, which can then be automatically turned into orders into our SAP system. So again, it fits in with the back end as well. So it comes down to, you know, making it the simplest way for them to do it, but also ensuring that everything they're doing is feeding the bits of the organization who need the information. You know, the thing I hate doing is asking people for information rather than having to go and get it myself. So if the CRM system works properly, me or the CEO should be able to go in there and run our own reports and look at our own dashboards without having to ask people for information. And that's kind of where we are today.
And that's so powerful because, I mean, you know, passively, I mean, you can get so much about how the organization's performing without wasting their time of having them generate a report for you.
Yep, completely. And we've very much gone down the dashboard route in Salesforce. So we have a whole host of dashboards which range from individual AEs looking at dashboards right up to the CEO, who he can just look at one dashboard. It has all his key information on. He can see all the metrics that he's interested in. You know, I have my version, the geos have a consistent one. So again, it's really live information. You can look at it when you want. If you want some background, we can go and dig it out and find it. But actually having the live information on the dashboards is absolutely crucial for us. And that, again, that's how we, you know, daily we monitor the business by looking at the dashboards. You know, we're looking at what have we closed so far, what's still open for the quarter, how's our pipeline for the rest of the year, what does our margin look like, and it's all visible in real time.
Yep, and so the salesperson can look at their own kind of personal metrics and personal dashboard, and they also get a sense as to what their contribution is to the overall organizational's goals.
Absolutely. And again, we've given more, you know, we've given different levels of visibility to different people in the organization in terms of the details to what they can see. So it's depending on which role they're performing, they can see different elements to it.
Yeah. What do you see as the emerging kind of critical issues in terms of sales performance?
I think it's really getting everyone to use the tools correctly. That's one of the key things that will help their performance, and it's continually improving those tools to make things easier and easier for the sales guy. You know, because at the end of the day, he can perform better if he's got more time, or he or she has got more time to go out there and sell and interact with people. So, you know, it's even things like, you know, we talk about our use of Twitter and our use of social media as a company, and some people kind of go, yeah, you know, that's fine if you've got time to do it. But actually, we're now educating people that actually you can get a real advantage by understanding who your customers and who your partners are by looking at social media. People are out there on social media, and it's a real good way to connect. And again, from a service perspective, or even a sales perspective, if there's someone on Twitter and they're looking for information that you can help them with, that's a great way to make a connection with them. So we're trying to sort of link them into our social business kind of profile and get them more involved, which again is different by country. Some countries are less engaged in that than other ones, but we're trying to share with everyone the benefit we've had in certain places and say, hey, here's a great opportunity. Here's something the sales development reps have been doing in North America. This works really well. Why don't you try it in the UK or try it in Germany? So we're trying to push those things out. And I think it's really making, it does come down to this whole notion of oiling the wheels. You know, the simpler you can make it for the sales guy, the more efficient they can be. And that's really where a lot of our development effort goes on, simplifying the process from their perspective. And also making us an easy to do business company, an easy to do business with company. So we want customers and partners to think we are easy to do business with. We don't want to make it difficult to place orders. We don't want to make it difficult to get a quote off us. So we're trying to make all that sort of front end go to market stuff easy as well. I think that all kind of helps. And then it does come down to, you know, the right people, the right management, the culture behind that. Again, we do talk about culture a lot at Enterasys, but it's key to a lot of things we talk about. It's lead to a lot of things we do. So I think having the individual sales guys, the management, and the back office people all aligned with the same culture.
Yeah, I really like the theme that you're driving around, you know, this simplification. And I think it's something, it's so obvious in a sense, such an easy notion, but I think we just overlook it. I mean, I go into so many organizations where I see we just keep piling on new initiatives. You know, and people are drowning in that and drowning on, I don't know what my priorities are, you know, and my life is in fact getting tougher. And, you know, I'm on this kind of soapbox these days of kind of radical simplification. We've kind of either got to clear the decks or I remember with one client a couple of weeks ago, they were talking about a pile full of initiatives. And I said, okay, for every new initiative that you put in place, you have to stop two. So which ones are you going to stop? You know, and they just said, we can't do that.
And I think that very much fits into the way we approach even things like our comp plan. You know, we try to make the comp plan as simple as possible, which is never easy because you're trying to achieve multiple goals. But you try and make it as simple as possible so it's easy to understand. A sales guy can calculate what he's going to make. So that's always one of the things that's very important. You know, we sometimes run incentives, you know, short-term incentives for the quarter. And again, one of the things behind those is not only achieve the goal, but make it very easy to understand and very easy to calculate. And then to be fair, we don't always get it right. You know, we sometimes do get it a bit more complicated because we are trying to cover multiple things, but it's always in our head to try and simplify the way we put those out there. And I think the other thing we've had is that we do sometimes struggle with some of our sales teams who they question why do they need to put things in our CRM system. And we do have that challenge in a number of areas. And they kind of say, well, you know, it's no benefit to me. And that's what we've been trying to explain to them is to how there is a benefit to them in terms of getting the back end. You know, if they've got the right information in the CRM system, it helps our company have the right products and the right pipeline.
Tony?
To understand the future required perspective, builds up the history of the customer relationship, which is it's good for them to have it in one place. But again, some of the guys don't see the benefits themselves. So there is an ongoing education about why, you know, not only do we want this information, it's actually good for you to have this information as an individual sales manager.
Yeah, it's kind of coincidental. I just got off before this call a phone call with a client of mine, a large software company that's just implementing Salesforce, and they just sent out the top executive sent out it was the right email, but it was a frightening email on you know, pipeline integrity and all. But the problem was he just kept saying, you know, this is what we need. And there is, you know, I could immediately see the sales guy is going to game it because there's no value in it for the salesperson.
Yeah, and that's the challenge because Salesforce, it's the way, it's our view of the future of the company. You know, we look at our pipeline, we look at the forecast categories, the sales stages of the deals. That is our only view of where the company's going this week, this month, this quarter, this year. So it's so important for us. But again, the sales guys don't always buy into that. So we are kind of explaining to them why that's important for them as well. You know, because at the end of the day, if we don't have the right visibility, we're going to take decisions on what's happening with the company. We're going to be giving direction to the engineering teams as to what the requirements are in terms of products, supply chain. We're going to be saying, you know, this quarter it looks like we need more of product Y rather than product X, and that affects what the sales guys do. So it's really trying to educate them that the things they put in there do matter to people, and it matters to them as well. And that's the key for us, is it matters to that guy as well as mattering to everyone else. And it is a challenge. There's no doubt about it. It is a challenge, particularly when you start off, when you know people are not used to entering lots of information. You know, every sales guy has his own little book with all his little contacts in, and trying to force them to put all that onto one system is not easy. And you know, we are 6-7 years into our implementation, and we're still improving things. Well, you know, we're still getting better information. It's still we're still learning from it.
But one of the things you said too that struck me at the beginning of this discussion was, and it was kind of implicit in what you said, is you understand how the salesperson thinks, and you understand kind of, you know, the sales guys will game the situation all the time, and that's not bad. I mean, you just have to design your programs, whether it's compensation, the sales process, or whatever, that, you know, that if they're gaming it, they're gaming it with the kind of outcomes that you want to have. Then you've designed a great system.
Yeah, absolutely right. That's exactly spot on. You have to kind of preempt the way the sales guy will think, the way he'll interpret what you're doing, and make sure it's steering them in the right direction. And if it is open to being, let's call it gaming, as I said, it's gaming it in the way that actually works for us. You know, they can by all means game it in a way that works for them individually, and that's fine as long as it also benefits the company.
The gaming is just natural behavior. So if it serves, if it creates the kind of behaviors and outcomes you want, then more power to it.
Absolutely, and it's amazing how much time, you know, we spend sort of modeling our comp plan or modeling an incentive and trying to kind of think, okay, well, how are certain people going to approach this? What behavior is it going to drive? What's the impact of that? Is that a positive impact? Is that a negative? You know, we constantly model the kind of comp plan and incentives, but also the tool side of it as well to make sure, okay, well, you know, how do we want this to work? How do we want people to use it?
Yeah, that's exactly the right approach. Let me shift gears a little bit, because you mentioned it just a moment ago. Do you view the role of the sales operations organization as kind of the voice of the salespeople into the rest of the organization? So you really use that to drive alignment with marketing, drive alignment with services, and so on.
Yes, absolutely, and I think particularly, and again, I'll talk about Enterasys particularly. We don't have a global head of sales, so we have four geographies with a head of sales in each geography, and then I'm the head as a worldwide head of sales ops. I am that kind of voice of sales into the teams, and again, that's the global sales voice, but also the detail as well. So if we have an individual situation happening in a particular country, we don't necessarily want the sales guy to be talking to a guy in product management. We'll be that interface if we need to be on the detail level. But then also, when it comes to strategy, you know, the long-term kind of product development, the short-term supply chain initiatives, then sales operations is the representation of sales. So a lot of the meetings we have, a lot of the collaboration that goes on is with sales operations instead of the actual sales teams, again, because we want those guys to be selling. So it's key that the sales operations is fully aligned with the sales team, understands the needs of the sales team, but then can interpret that and pass that on to the rest of the organization. So it's a very, very key kind of conduit between all the different functions.
So, and it's a great way to both drive efficiency and really powerful kind of two-way communication of saying, you know, here's what we need to be effective as an organization, you know, and you know, if for instance you're bringing a new product to market, you know, here's the process that we use to effectively bring new products to market, and here's what we need you to do.
Absolutely, and it's, you've just got it right. It's two ways. As well as being the voice of sales to the rest of the organization, it's also in a lot of time the voice of the rest of the organization into sales.
Yep.
So if we have specific initiatives that we want to push in a certain direction, we will be that person who'll interface with the sales team on behalf of whatever function it is to make sure we're driving the right way. So, you know, as we're getting towards the end of the quarter, quite often finance are involved in deals and engineering are involved in deals. So we'll be working that middle section, working the communication both ways. So yeah, it is very much a two-way model.
So that must put you between a rock and a hard place a lot of times.
It kind of makes it interesting because you quite often end up with the sales team have a particular requirement and they see, but my customer needs this, then let's say engineering or supply will be saying, but hey, we can't do that, but we can do this. And then you've got to try and navigate your way through to something that's working for the customer, it's working for the sales team, but it's working for us as the company as well. So it's trying to make sure that balance is right. The last thing as a sales operations person is you don't want to be seen as a sales blocker. You want to be seen as someone who's actually helping sales. So, but you have to do that in a kind of smart way so that the corporate teams don't see you as just purely a sales guy who's constantly pushing sales. So it's interpreting things the right way and kind of making sure everyone's getting what they need from the process. But actually, at the end of the day, the company is getting what it needs.
Yeah. But it also, you may not have done it explicitly, but it seems that implicitly with your whole focus on the customer, the overall organization's focus on the customer and serving the customer, you also have kind of the I'll call it the lean or agile view of who the customer is. So a lot of your organizations probably look at who's the person downstream of me, who do I serve, and how do I make their lives easier?
Absolutely. And I think the whole notion of there's nothing more important than the customer also implies internally and externally.
Yep.
It's as much working with the internal customers as it is a message that we can put externally. So I think it's very important to make sure you are, and again, particularly sales operations, you are providing that service. And one day you're providing a service to the sales organization. The next day your service is actually being provided to supply chain, engineering, finance, or whoever. So again, you can switch both directions. But again, yeah, it's providing that service to the customer.
Let me ask you, in shifting, and this is actually a conversation Val and I have never had, but we see that the whole model of customer engagement is changing really profoundly, and that we used to have kind of marketing feeds sales, and sales takes hopefully great leads for marketing and then goes, qualifies them and moves them through the sales process. But now we're seeing what happens is the way we engage our customers is very different, so that the kind of sequential nature of the marketing and sales, marketing being awareness, demand generation, and those kinds of things, it's become very, very intertwined where salespeople are maybe initiating, if you look at like a lot of stuff behind the challenger sale and so on, is that salespeople may be initiating the conversation right now and then turning it over to marketing for nurturing and development for a period of time, and then eventually the salesperson gets re-engaged. So, and we're seeing now marketing staying engaged longer with providing tools around case studies, justification, and so on. So the processes are so intertwined. Are you starting to see that kind of pressure within Enterasys of not kind of that sequential nature, but just really close collaboration and changing the engagement model pretty profoundly?
I think, yeah, we're definitely starting to see that. I think there's always been a very close connection between our marketing and sales organization, particularly our field marketing. So, the field marketing is very much the kind of tactical things that happen in the regions, and that's very much aligned with the overall sales process. It's not purely lead generation. And then as we go through, we see our marketing organization very much helping to support deals and work with deals, kind of work, some of that you mentioned case studies and that kind of thing. So that very much fits into our sales cycle as we see it. So we don't have the really kind of hard and fast separation and silos between marketing and sales. It's very much aligned, and I think one of the great things Val has done, he became CMO middle of last year.
Right.
He's really got that customer focus going, which again very much aligns with the sales organization. He's trying to drive much better awareness and much better connections, which again, everyone in the sales organization, from the marketing team, but also the sales development reps who are generating the leads, they're working very closely with marketing. And again, a lot of it fits into the type of things we're trying to do on social media in terms of building a profile, using the information on there, making the connections easier. So we're kind of trying to try tie it all together, but certainly we're not seeing it as a crystal clear, here's marketing's role, here's sales role. There's very much a collaboration across. And to be fair, there always kind of has been, but there's more and more of it in the last kind of 6-12 months, I would say.
Yep. Okay, super. What about, and excuse me for jumping around a little bit, but, you know, the whole social business aspect of it, how do you deal with some of your sales guys that are a little bit skeptical about it?
I think that what we've tried to do is show how it's been working. I think that's the key thing, you know. As a social business, we're trying to show people where this has been successful. So, you know, we do look at Valor as being a great example. You know, he's created a lot of connections and collaboration outside of the company by using social media as a profile. But then also inside the company, we're trying to build that same kind of feeling without necessarily using the platforms or the social tools. So, you know, it is all about collaboration. It's not about what technology we're using to do that. It's just about working together, the culture that we have, you know, again, the right people that we're using within the organization, hiring the right people. It's very much fitting everybody into that. And we do have, you know, again, if we have certain parts of the organization who would look at our concept of a social business and say, well, I'm not on Twitter, so I'm not part of that. And we would challenge that and say, well, hang on a minute, it's not about being on Twitter. It's about being engaged with the company,
right?
Collaborating with other functions. So you might not think you're being social, but actually you are. You are fulfilling the traits of a social business without actually realizing it. And then, like I say, we do use good examples where we can point to specific things that have happened as a result of our collaboration internally or externally. So we try to use real life examples and show that it can really work. And again, I think the thing is, we try and steer people a little bit away from making it about Twitter or about Google Plus or about Facebook, and it's about the processes and, again, I'll use the word again, collaboration that goes with it. It's more about that than the actual technology itself.
But what's really interesting, and particularly about the way Vala describes it, is social business is more about behaviors and characteristics and traits.
Yep.
Is that's what what's social about business, and then technology just provides an ability to magnify the impact or the shorten this time to customer and those kinds of things.
Absolutely, and I think that's where our culture that we've had in place for a number of years is kind of without us calling it a social business in the past. That's very much what we've always been.
Yeah.
Without really understanding it as a social business. So people have always kind of had that mindset that we all operate with this kind of culture that's all about collaboration and empowerment and innovation. That's all part of the culture, which is, in essence, what the social business aspect is about as well.
Yeah,
so we've always had that in place.
People who join Enterasys are joining a social business, and oh, by the way, there's technology that helps us do that.
Absolutely. That's absolutely. I think technology is, I think on one of Vala's lists, he talks about culture, people, process, and then technology.
Exactly.
So, you know, it is very much the last aspect of it. It's about a lot more than just the technology behind it.
Exactly. What do you see as kind of the futures? If you had to, you know, build your job from scratch, how would you change it?
Ooh, another good one. I think the key thing for me with sales operations is having that seat at the table whereby you've got all the connections across all the different functions. Your main role is representing sales, and it is connected into all the different parts of the organization. I think the way the role is at Enterasys, it's pretty close to that, in all honesty. The sales enablement bit could be more closely aligned, I think, and there's a few areas that could be brought into it. But I think the way we operate it here actually fits in very well with what you would want a sales operations function to do. And again, it's evolved all the time. You know, when I joined Enterasys, which is now 10 years ago next month, actually, I was on the kind of finance side of the house. And my background is I am an accountant by background. And I think we've slowly managed to move away from being a finance type function to being more of an independent function, which is closely aligned with sales, which I think is exactly the right place for it to be. So it's very hard to say what I would change about it, because actually the way it works, I think, is actually very good at the moment within Enterasys. So it's hard to think about how it would be different. Yeah, I think we have very good connections. You know, we work very closely with the IT teams. So they're the ones who are developing the tools around the quoting tools and around the CRMs and everything else. So there's a very good alignment with that side of the house to make sure that we are developing things in the right way. So if we bring out an enhancement to our quoting tool or an enhancement to the CRM, it very much fits in with what we want to achieve as an overall business. But yeah, I think it's hard to describe how I would do it differently, because actually I think this is a pretty well-suited setup that we have at Enterasys.
No, I mean, again, as an outsider just kind of observing things, and you know what I see about, you know, all sorts of people's Enterasys people engagement in the communities that I kind of follow, and you know, just see some of the stuff, you know, that I've seen in my conversations with Val, and as you've reinforced it, you know, it really seems that, you know, you're a business that lives its values and lives its strategy and recruits people who buy into that, and that whole kind of formula of culture, collaboration, accountability, focus on.
Yeah, and I think you've used a really good word there, accountability. You know, the culture is great and the collaboration is great, but there is also a huge element of accountability. You know, it's all well and good having this culture that describes we want these people to all work together, but at the end of the day, we all have goals that we have to make, and we all have aims that we want to get to. So it is very much that accountability as well.
Yeah. Let me. And here's the ugly question: how are you as running the sales operations organization? How are you measured?
Well, measured. That's a very interesting one. So. I suppose one of the key measures that people look at me as a function is very much, what's the revenue doing? Are we a growing business? Are we a profitable business? Because that's very much two of the things that I would say my role drives. So revenue and margin. Mm-hmm. So again, that comes into, you know, revenue in terms of getting the sales teams to maximize what they can do. Margin, I also look after the pricing team. So we have the deal desk, as it would be known. Okay, that's all within my function. So they're the two big picture things, and also financially, they're the two things I'm specifically measured on: revenue and margin.
Yep.
But also, I think outside of any kind of financial measures, forecast accuracy is a big one. You know, I would take a lot of responsibility and a lot of pride in what we do from a forecasting perspective, because that again is very key to our investors and our owners. That they know we can be reliable and we understand our business and we can forecast what our business is going to do. And I take a lot of responsibility for that process to make sure it's working right through the organization. So there's no hard and fast measures on that for me personally, but that's something that I look at and say, you know, if we're not making our forecast, then I'm feeling bad about that. So it's kind of the two things that I feel responsible for and things I'm actually physically measured on.
Outstanding. Outstanding. What should I have asked you that we haven't covered yet? We've gone through all sorts of stuff. It's really been fascinating.
Yeah, I think I made some notes last night based on some of your comments. I'll just quickly scan through and see if there's anything in there. I think the other area that I would say that I get involved in quite a lot more, which is not necessarily my area as such, but it's the go-to-market model. You know, I do a lot of work with the CEO and with the sales leads. To work on, you know, what our go-to-market model looks like today, what do we think it should look like in the future. You know, we're very much a channel business, so it's really working with that channel to make sure we've got the right model working from a channel business, and then also channel enablement. So, you know, I talked about making the sales process easier for our sales guys. We actually have a whole host of partners out there who we also want to make the sales process easy for. So we're looking at ways to embrace them in our sales process and some of our tools a bit more as well.
Okay. Yeah. So it goes, it's recruiting the right kind of partners, the whole portals, the training, the certification, the tools that you extend to them.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, we try and make those very much an extension of what we already provide. So, you know, our internal quoting system, there's an element of it that can be used by our partner community. So there's things like that we try to embrace them in what we're doing. And even, There's just little things like, we use Salesforce Chatter, and again, in the Chatter groups, you can bring in partners and customers into those groups. So again, we kind of engage those in our internal processes as well. So it's kind of, again, ties into the whole kind of collaboration thing, is we want our partners to feel as though they're part of our business as well.
But I also, I'm glad you brought that up, because that whole kind of sales go-to-market model, the sales deployment model, is something that you have to constantly assess, because, we have new customers and new ways of reaching them. And, too many organizations, start with one model and they stay with it forever, and they really lose connection with the customers. So I like that kind of
strategy. Absolutely. Yep. And we very much... we do it geographically. So we have an overarching kind of go-to-market model, mm-hmm. but then where we need to, we'll modify it within specific geographies and specific countries. So if we see that one particular geography can really benefit from a really verticalized focus, we'll go down a vertical route and we'll look for partners who are vertical specialists. Yeah. Whereas in another region where it's geographical based, we'll use the same partner program and the same go-to-market approach, but the partners may well be geographical based partners rather than vertical based partners, but the process is still very similar. So we globalize as much as we can, but localize when we need to. That's kind of the approach to our channel model.
And that makes a huge amount of, I just look at the difference in a channel strategy and a deployment strategy, just say in Europe, Asia, and the US. It's so very different.
Yeah, absolutely.
One size fits all is a sure way to underperformance.
Absolutely. We try to make sure that the big picture is the same, but when it comes to the detail, like you say, working in Germany or working in the UK and working in North America and working in Australia, it's a very different approach. And we do need and we do embrace that flexibility whilst we're still working on a global model.
Yeah. Outstanding. Well, this has just been so much fun. I really appreciate your thoughtfulness at it. And the insights you've given, it really is helpful.